White House announces that U.S. President Donald Trump will now meet for a second time North Korean leader Kim Jong-un this February. In a rare visit by a top general from Pyongyang to Washington, Vice Chairman Kim Yong-chol, a right-hand man to the North Korean leader, met with Trump at the White House. Kim Jong-un and Trump held a landmark first meeting back in June 2018 in Singapore, where they signed an agreement to work towards the North's denuclearization. Little progress, though, has been made since then. North Korea demands relief from sanctions, while the U.S. insists on a policy of maximum pressure without giving anything in return to the North. Joining us now out of Florida is David William Peer, political, economic, and historical columnist there. Hello, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. Your thoughts now on the second meeting. It seems like the first one, it initially seemed fruitful, but the North has been very skeptical, and at times even they said it's almost to a caustic level, the fact that the U.S. wants to give nothing but get a lot.
Well, that's exactly true. And I think it's hard to tell what's on Trump's mind, but basically I think that Kim Jong-un knows better than to trust the U.S. The U.S. has violated every treaty and every agreement that it's made. In fact, it was the U.S. that first nuclearized the Korean Peninsula in 1957 in violation of the 1953 Armistice Agreement. So the U.S. was the first one to nuclearize Korea. And it's the U.S. that's been threatening North Korea for 70 years. And it was the U.S. that artificially divided Korea. Korea is one country. It's been one country for probably 3,000 years. But at the end of World War II, the U.S. Unilaterally divided Korea into a South Korea, which the U.S. Then was occupying after World War II and continued to occupy right up until the Korean War of 1950. And it's still unclear who started that war. But I think, I can't speak for Kim Jong-un, but I think that the North Koreans know that they really need to have leverage and that they cannot trust the U.S., although they have made overtures many, many times in the past. Kim Jong-un has, and his father and his grandfather have, and they've wanted to have good relations with the U.S., but the U.S. Does not want to have good relations with any country that is socialist or communist or does not allow the U.S. to come in with their investments and to exploit their natural resources and their people. Dan Coates, just 1 minute ago, Dan Coates said it himself at the Aspen Institute in 2017, and he said the lesson of Libya is that if you have nuclear weapons, don't give them up, and if you don't have nuclear weapons, get them, and if you do have nuclear weapons, don't give them up. And that's Dan Coates, who's the National Director of Intelligence, Trump's top man in intelligence.
And David, I mean, obviously, Kim Jong-un is going to probably bring these the exact things that you just echoed. He's going to bring those out in this next meeting, obviously, that, look, if we're going to try to do this denuclearization thing, we're going to need some good faith gestures coming out of Washington. Your thoughts on what you foresee taking place in this second meeting, and if you think, are you in any way optimistic that things will get better between the two?
Well, I mean, even if things are better between the U.S. and North Korea for a short period of time, I think Iran knows from experience that what one president says, it doesn't mean anything to a new president. And so even if there were a treaty, the U.S. always finds a way to get out of treaties when they want to. So I think that it's going to be pretty hard for Kim Jong-un to really accept any bargains with the U.S., especially where the U.S. will not lift economic sanctions. Now, economic sanctions is war. Economic sanctions is killing people, children, babies, women, men, old people in North Korea, that's a form of warfare. So Kim Jong-un, you know, he says he's not going to give anything up unless the U.S. at least lifts its economic sanctions, and the U.S. is refusing to do that. So until sanctions are lifted, we've seen a calming of the tone and the rhetoric from both Trump and Kim Jong-un. But basically, North Korea has got the upper hand in that the U.S. cannot invade North Korea without suffering several million casualties of South Koreans and also several hundred thousand of U.S. Americans.
And David, before we let you go, we're over time, but in just less than a minute, I mean, there is a silver lining here after that initial first meeting between the two in Singapore. I mean, even if we didn't see too much action out of Washington to try to rehabilitate and repair ties, we did see a lot of good stuff taking place between North and South Korea, didn't we?
Absolutely, and that has been at the that's been all initiated by the Koreans themselves. The U.S. in fact has been opposed to that. If you remember at the Olympics, where our Vice President Pence refused to stand when the North Koreans entered the arena. So I mean, you know, they've been opposed to the bettering of relations between North Korea and South Korea. And again, Korea is one country. The Korean people want to unify. They want to unify their country again. They have every right to do that. And it's only with the efforts of President Moon Jae-in of South Korea that they have really been able to move in that direction, because President Moon has basically been, he's taken a free hand and not let the U.S. override him, because they were the people in the Trump administration were extremely upset with what Moon was doing initially. And who knows why they have decided that they want to have maybe calmer relations with North Korea right now. I suspect that it's because they have much bigger plans in mind. Primarily, Iran is their number one target right now. They don't want to get tied down fighting with Korea.
Okay, Dave, we got to go. We're way over time. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we'll have to just continue this at some other time. Out of Florida, that was Mr. David William Pierre, political, economic, and historical columnist. Thanks, David.